First of all, I would like to say Tashi Delek to all of you, as I've been asked by our Dharma friend. I will give short teaching on the Triple Vision. Generally speaking, in our Sakya tradition, the most important teaching is known as the Precious Lamdae teaching. And this has been passed down from great Vajradhara, Vajranarayana, then to Mahasiddhavirupa. And Mahasiddhavirupa gave this teaching to his disciple. And then his disciple also gave to his own disciple. So in this way, there are five Indian Mahasiddhas in this lineage. Then the fifth one called Mahasiddha Gayadhara. And Gayadhara gave this teaching to Domi Lhotse Washakya Isha. So he is the first dependent to receive this precious teaching. And then he gave this to Satan Kirik. And then Satan Kirik gave this to Shangdun Chöbar. And then Shangdun Chöbar gave this precious teaching to the great Sakyapa Gunga Ningbo. He is the main master in the five founding masters. So this teaching has been passed down in an unbroken lineage right from great Vajradhara up until now. And I myself have received the common and uncommon precious Lamdae teachings many times from my root guru, His Holiness, the 41st common teaching Rinpoche. And in this teaching, the preliminary of this teaching is known as the Triple Vision. And the main part of the teaching is called the Triple Tantra. So this Triple Vision is part of the Precious Lamdae teaching. And this Precious Lamdae teaching is a complete part, a complete teaching right from refuge up until attaining the Buddhahood. It has all the practice or all the parts to attain the Buddha Vajradhara state. And Triple Vision is the preliminary teaching. And this is according to the Mahayana or General Mahayana, or this is common with the General Mahayana or the Paramitayana. And in this teaching, it has three main divisions or three main subjects, which are known as the preliminary part, main part, and the conclusion part. Preliminary part means to take refuge and do the supplication prayers. And main part is the actual topic of this precious Triple Vision teaching. And then conclusion part means to dedicate the merits along with all the merits, and then to have a mindfulness and alertness during the post teaching sessions or post meditative sessions. So these are the three main topics or three main subjects. So first, I will explain a little bit about the refuge. So, to have a good practice of refuge, first we must have a good cause we must contemplate on the cause of refuge. So the cause of refuge has three kinds or three parts. They are known as the fear, faith, and compassion. Fear and faith are common cause of refuge. Common means common with all the Buddhist schools. So fear generally means fear of experiencing the sufferings of the samsara. When we have such fear, and out of this fear, we look for refuge, we look for a safer place, we look for a place where there is happiness, where there is no suffering. So for that, we go for refuge. So out of fear, we take refuge. And then, also, because we have the selfish thought, which is the cause of all the problems, root of all the problems and sufferings of the samsara. So, because of this fear of having the selfish thought, we take refuge. For example, if there's a poisonous snake in our room, then suddenly we have great fear, and out of that fear, we go for a safer place. We try to avoid this. We try to go for a safer place. We take refuge to a safer place. Similarly, when we have such fear of having the selfish thought or self-cherishing thought, which is the root of all the sufferings of the samsara, due to this, then we look for refuge and then we find Triple Gem or Guru in Triple Gem as our refuge. So we take refuge in this way. The second cause of refuge is faith. In the sutra, it says faith is important. For example, the faith is like a seed. So if the seed is burned, or if the seed is rotten, then planting such seed in the fertile ground will not have a good crop, because seed itself has a problem. So similarly, if you don't have sincere faith, then no matter how much teachings that we receive, or no matter how much practice that we do, we will not have good result. So faith is very important, and in the teaching it says there are three kinds of faith, known as the clear faith, desiring faith, and believing faith. So first one means one is really amazed and one is really impressed by the ultimate qualities and infinite qualities. And then second is desiring faith, which means one really desire to have such state of Triple Gem or Buddha for the sake of all the sentient beings. And third faith is known as believing faith, which means we really believe in the ultimate qualities of the Buddha without any doubt and hesitation. So with this faith, then we take refuge. Without any faith, without any reason, we will not take refuge in the Triple Gem. Because we have faith in the Triple Gem, we take refuge. So therefore, faith is the cause of refuge. And then the third cause is known as the compassion. Compassion means wishing all the sentient beings to be free from the suffering and the cause of sufferings. So generating the limitless compassion or the great compassion thought is beneficial, is great. But just by having this thought, we cannot liberate all the sentient beings. To liberate all the sentient beings from the sufferings of the samsara and to place all the beings on the state of liberation and enlightenment state, we must take refuge in the triple gem. So, therefore, out of great compassion, we take refuge. So, with these three calls, we take refuge, and we take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha from this time until our self attains Buddhahood. And from this time, and the purpose is not for one's own sake, and not for the sake of a few people, but for the sake of all the sentient beings without any discrimination or exception. So with such thought, we take refuge. And when we take refuge in the triple gem, we should think that no matter whatever situation that we may face in our life, whether it's happy or sad, no matter whatever situation that we may face, we shall never give up the faith and devotion to the Triple Gem. So with such unshakable and strong faith and devotion, we take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, or the Triple Gem. So we should always take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And by taking refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, then we should know that by doing this, we can gain great benefit. It is said in the sutra, if the benefits of taking refuge vow is in a physical form, then the whole universe is too small to contain it. So it has inconceivable and unimaginable or limitless or infinite benefits. And after taking the refuge vow, then we must follow the rules. So first, how to take refuge? We should take refuge from a master or from a shrine in a proper way with proper rituals. And then we should keep the rules. There are two kinds, general and specific rules. General means we should keep the five precepts and others. And specific means after taking refuge in the Buddha, we should not take refuge in the mundane gods, etc. And after taking refuge in the Dhamma, we should not harm any sentient beings. And after taking refuge in the Sangha, we should not make non-Buddhists as our spiritual companions. Although we can make worldly friends, but not as a spiritual companions. So, anyway, after doing the refuge practice, then we should do the proper supplications. And then at the end, we should do proper dedication. Or if we continue to study and practice the following topics, then after refuge, then we go to the main part of the teaching. So the main part of the teaching is the triple vision. Triple vision means impure vision, vision experience, and pure vision. So, first, in order to generate the thought of renunciation, we must contemplate on the impure vision. And impure vision also has three kinds. In order to generate the total renunciation, we must contemplate on the shortcomings of the samsara. And second, in order to have great enthusiasm or great diligence, we must contemplate on the difficulties of obtaining the precious human life. And then, in order to show or to know what are the right actions and what are the wrong actions, we need to study and practice on the law of karma or cause and effect. So first, we need to know the shortcomings of the samsara. In the sutra, it says the whole samsara is in the nature of suffering. The example is even on top of the needle, that much of space is also part of the suffering. There's no real happiness. So even tiny space has no real happiness. So it means the whole samsara is full of suffering, full of misery, full of problems. So if we examine this world, there are many different countries, there are many different people, different culture, different religions, etc. But wherever we go, we will not find a single place where there's no suffering. We will not find a single place where there's only happiness. Many people are changing their residence, changing their place to stay. Many people from backward cities and countries are trying to go to our developed cities and developed countries. But just by going there, they will not gain the real happiness. They will still have physical pains and mental anxieties. And also, in general, they will still have the suffering of sickness, old age, death. In general, every human beings have this suffering of birth, old age, sickness, and death. So, no matter wherever we go, there's not a single place where there's a happiness only. So, this shows the whole samsara is in the nature of suffering. Samsara is full of suffering, and in the samsara there are six realms of beings, three lower realms and three higher realms. The beings of three lower realms means hell being, hungry ghost being, and animals. And higher realms, the beings of three higher realms means human beings, demigods, and gods. So I will not go through their sufferings in detail, but in short, all these beings are suffering. So by knowing the suffering as it is, then it will help us to develop this sincere wish to gain liberation, sincere wish to renounce this samsara, sincere wish to gain the genuine liberation from the whole samsara. So, knowing the sufferings of the samsara will definitely help us to develop the thought renunciation or wish to gain the liberation from the whole samsara. So this wish, this thought renunciation is really important, because without this, we cannot become a Buddhist, because Lord Buddha has given enormous amount of teachings, and all these teachings are based on helping sentient beings. It's based on leading the sentient beings from the sufferings and dissatisfactions of the samsara, and to place them on the state of liberation and enlightenment state. So Buddha has never taught a single word of teaching for us to gain worldly results or mundane results. So purpose of Buddha's teaching is to gain liberation and attain the enlightenment state for all of us. And from our side, from our followers' side, if we practice the Buddha's precious and profound teachings for the purpose of gaining mundane results or worldly results in this life alone, then the purpose of our practice and the purpose of Buddha giving the Dharma teaching is not the same. It's opposite to each other, because we want to stay in the samsara and Buddha wish to liberate us from the samsara. So staying in the samsara and getting out of the samsara are opposite. In and out are opposite. For example, staying in the house and going out of the house, these two are opposite. These cannot be at the same time to the same person. So if we really wish to follow Buddha, then we must follow the Buddha's teaching. We must practice according to the Buddha's intent. And we must have the thought renunciation. Without this, we even cannot take genuine refuge vow. So without the thought renunciation, we cannot become a real Buddhist or genuine Buddhist. So therefore, it is very important to know the suffering of the samsara as it is, and through this, it will really help us to develop the thought renunciation towards the whole samsara. And this is the fundamental practice of Buddha's teaching. Based on this thought renunciation, then we can practice many more Dharma or all the other Dharma teachings. So first we should know the shortcomings of samsara, and then we should know the difficulty of obtaining the precious human life in order to have the enthusiasm, in order to have more diligence in our practice. Because this life is very precious. This life is very precious, but it is very rare to obtain. From the cause point of view, from the number point of view, from example point of view, from nature point of view, from all these points of view, it clearly shows how difficult it is to obtain the precious human life. So, if we know this, then we will not waste this great opportunity to practice Dharma. And if we use this precious life in a proper way, in a meaningful way, in a purposeful way, then it is far more beneficial than having the wish-fulfilling jewel. If we have wish-fulfilling jewel, then due to this, it can give us food or accommodations or clothes, etc. Whatever we need in this life can be given by such precious wish-fulfilling jewel or gem. But it will not give us the real happiness, and it will not give us the happiness of next life, or it will not give us liberation or enlightenment instead. But if we use this precious human life in a meaningful way, then not only we can fulfill all our wishes of this life, but also we can have good rebirth, and not only that, we can gain liberation and enlightenment instead. So it is far more beneficial than having the wish-fulfilling jewel. However, the precious human life is impermanent. So it is certain that all will die, because our life is impermanent. So whoever was born in this samsara will end with death. There's no one who was born and who never dies. So it means our life is impermanent. And also our life is very fragile. Even the most solid objects can be destroyed, can be dismantled. So therefore, there's no need to mention that our fragile body will be dismantled, or will become ashes, or will be eaten by animals, or etc. So therefore, our life is impermanent. And also, from year by year, day by day, minute by minute, moment by moment, we are getting nearer and nearer to our death. So therefore, it is certain that all will die, but it is not certain when we will die, because we don't have a certain lifespan. As we can see, people can die at any age. Some dies in their mother's womb, some dies right after their birth, and some dies in different ages, or people die at different ages or in different age group. So therefore, it is not certain when we will die. And also, there are many unfavorable conditions, outer and inner unfavorable conditions that can take our own dear life. And also, there are very few favorable conditions that can sustain our life. And sometimes the favorable conditions such as food and medicine can be the one that can take our life, can become unfavorable because of food poisoning, or because of wrong medicine or overdoses of medicine, etc. So the favorable condition for us to maintain or to sustain is very few. So therefore, it is uncertain when we will die. And at the time of death, our wealth, or our property will not help us to avoid the debt, and also our friends, our family members and supporters will not help us to avoid the debt, and also our power, our other characters will not help us to avoid the debt. So at the time of the debt, the real protector, the real refuge, the real guidance is our own practice and our own guru. So therefore, without any delay, we must focus single-pointedly on the practice of Dharma with great devotion and with great faith based on logical reasons. So this life is very precious and very beneficial, yet it is impermanent. And in our life, we experience many different feelings. We experience many sufferings and other feelings. And these are due to our own actions. So the next main topic is action or the karma. In the sutra, Lord Buddha said, for example, the king, when he dies, his wealth, his family members and friends will not follow him to the next life. But wherever he goes, his own actions that he has done will follow. So the action will follow him until it is written on him, whether it's good or bad. So our own action will only happen on ourselves. It will not happen on other inanimate objects or sentient beings. It will only happen on ourselves if it has not been purified or if our own negative action is not confessed or not purified, then it will happen definitely on ourselves. So karma or the law of karma is very important. Actually, the Lord Buddha's teaching is based on karma. And this karma is based on past lives, present life, and the future lives. And it does not only depend on this life. So in our tradition, in the Buddhist tradition, law of karma is very important. And it is fair to all the beings without any exception. There's no special treatment to anybody. Everyone is equal, same in the law of karma. Like myself, at the moment, in our Sakyapa community, I'm holding a high title, high position. But it doesn't mean that now I'm above the law of karma. Still, I'm under the law of karma. I need to follow the law of karma. Still, if I do wrong things, then definitely I need to experience the suffering which is caused by my own actions. So, whether you are poor or rich, whether you are ordinary or high-ranking person, no matter who you are, everyone is same in the law of karma. And we cannot deceive the law of karma. We can deceive our fellow human beings through our physical behaviors and also through our verbal expressions. But we cannot deceive the law of karma. We cannot bribe the law of karma. Law of karma is fair to everyone without any exception. And We cannot hide anything from the law of karma. We can hide our own bad actions from other beings, from other humans, but we cannot hide from the law of karma. For example, if one has taken the poison in front of people or secretly, no matter where he or she took the poison, it will have the same effect. It will cause stomach pain or other physical pains, and it can also take their own life, whether you have taken in front of people or secretly. So the effect of the poison is same. So similarly, whether one discloses our own negative actions or keep secret, no matter whatever you do, bad action is always a bad action that can always, that will always cause the suffering. There will be the cause of suffering. So this law of karma is very powerful. We cannot hide anything from the law of karma. We cannot bribe, we cannot deceive. So best thing is we should always respect the law of karma and follow the law of karma according to the Buddha's teaching, which means we should try to abandon the non-virtuous deeds. As you know, non-virtuous deeds has 10 main different kinds. 3 physical non-virtuous, which means killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct, and 4 verbal negative actions, which are known as lie, schism, harsh words, and idle gossips, and then 3 mental negative actions, known as covetism, ill will, and wrong view. So I will not go through these in detail because of the shortage of time. So we should know these negative deeds, and their results are always suffering. And with such knowledge, we should try to abandon these negative deeds as much as possible. And then we should know the 10 virtuous deeds, which are the opposite of 10 non-virtuous. And by knowing these 10 virtues, then we should also know that these can always produce a good result. This will be the cause of all the happiness. So with such knowledge, we should try to adopt, we should try to do virtuous deeds as many as possible. Then third main action is on the neutral deeds. First one is negative, second is positive, and third one is neutral deeds, which means like walking, going, coming, sleeping, eating, etc. So these are neutral, so these are not positive or negative actions. So therefore, this does not cause happiness or suffering. But depending on our own intention, it can be converted to non-virtue or virtue. So therefore, we should try our best to convert or to transform these neutral deeds into virtuous deeds. For example, when we take food, at that time we can think we are feeding the germs that are in our body, and also by taking the food we can live long. And when we have a longer life, then we have more time to practice Dharma. So with such intention, if we take the food, then the action of taking the food can be converted or transformed into the virtues. So this is just an example. So in short, we should try our best to convert all the neutral deeds into virtuous deeds. So in short, impure vision has three main topics in the triple vision teaching. First one is shortcomings of the samsara. Second one is difficulty of obtaining the personal life. And third one is the law of karma. So with these three main topics, I just conclude my short teaching on the first vision, which is the impure vision. The second vision is known as the vision of experience, and this has two kinds, the common one and the uncommon one. So the common one is the main topic in this triple vision teaching, because it is common with the Paramahayana teaching. And the common vision experience has three main topics, which are known as the loving kindness, compassion, and enlightened mind, or the bodhicitta. So first, loving kindness. Generally speaking, every one of us has the loving kindness. Some has more and some has less, but we all have the loving kindness. But normally, the loving kindness that worldly people have is limited. It can only extend to our own family members, friends, and our side, people of our side. So, this is not enough. What we need is to practice the loving kindness which has no boundary, which can extend towards all the sentient beings without any exception and discrimination. We must love all without any condition. If we are practicing loving kindness towards others to gain something back from such practice, then our intention is not pure. Our intention is not genuine. So, what we should practice is, we should practice the unconditional loving kindness to all the sentient beings. So, all the sentient beings means not only all the people from the same country, or not only all the people from the same religion or same sect or school, but it means whether people are following Buddhist or other religion, whether they are from same country or from other country or from other continent, no matter wherever they are, no matter whoever they are, we should practice the unconditional love to all the sentient beings. Mentally, we can practice the loving kindness to all. Physically, it is not possible to reach all the sentient beings. But here, this practice is a mental practice. So, mentally, we can definitely extend the practice of loving kindness to all the sentient beings without any exception. So this is the one that we need to practice. So whether we can practice the loving kindness or not in such a way depends on our object. If the object of our loving kindness is limited, then no matter how much we practice, we cannot have the limitless loving kindness or limitless thought or limitless practice, because our object is limited. So, to practice the limitless loving kindness, it depends on the object of the practice or the loving kindness. So here, the object is all the sentient beings. Because the object is limitless, therefore, the subject or the thought or the loving kindness is also known as the limitless loving kindness. So, object and subject are dependent. We cannot have limitless practice without having the limitless object. So therefore, first it is very important to know or to recognize what is the meaning of all the sentient beings or limitless sentient beings. So limitless sentient beings means not only all the beings of this world, but all the beings of the samsara, which includes the three lower realms, the three higher realms, and including the bardo beings. And not only that, those who are already gained the liberation, such as Shravakas and Vajra Buddhas and Noble Bodhisattvas, those who are yet to attain the complete Buddhahood. So these are also objects of our loving kindness, because they are also sentient beings, because they also have not gained the ultimate happiness. So when we say loving kindness means wishing all the beings to gain happiness and to have or to engage in the cause of happiness. So happiness doesn't mean only the temporary happiness, but it also means the ultimate happiness. So therefore, these Shravakas and Bhatiya Buddhas and Noble Bodhisattvas who are on the bhumis, they have not gained the ultimate Buddhahood. So they have not gained the ultimate happiness. So therefore, they are also our object. So all these are our objects. So therefore, this object becomes limitless. And because of that, our thought becomes limitless. And this loving kindness is very important. Without this, we cannot practice the great compassion. And without this practice of great compassion, we cannot practice the bodhicitta. And without the practice of bodhicitta, we cannot enter into the Mahayana path. And without entering into the Mahayana path, it is not possible for us to gain the liberation from the whole samsara according to the Mahayana tradition, and eventually to gain or to attain the Buddhahood, we must practice all these, such as loving kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta. So therefore, the practice of loving kindness is like the root of all these other practices and all these results. So loving kindness is very important. Then similarly, great compassion is also very important. The great Acharya Chandrakirti, in his text called the Madhyamika Avatara, in this text Chandrakirti said, he pays homage to the great compassion and not to Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. Because in his text it says, Shravakas and Bhatika Buddhas are born from the Buddha, and Buddhas are born from the Bodhisattvas, and Bodhisattvas are born from the three qualities which are known as the Bodhicitta, the non-dual wisdom, and the compassion, the great compassion. So the first two, the bodhicitta and non-dual wisdom, their root is also great compassion. So therefore, Chandrakirti pays homage to the great compassion. And also he said, great compassion is very important when we enter into the Mahayana path, and also when we are on the path, and then when we attend the Buddhahood, at that time also, great compassion is very important. So therefore, great compassion is important at all these times, in the beginning, in the middle, and also at the end. So this is very important. In the teaching it says, if we have the genuine practice of great compassion, which depends on the limitless sentience as the object. So if we have the great compassion, the genuine one, then just by having this, you can have many other genuine qualities. It is like if we invite the emperor, then naturally, without having a special request or a separate invitation, all his entourage will also come. So similarly, if we have the genuine great compassion, then with this, many other qualities will also arise in our mental continuum. With that, then we can gain higher and higher realization, and then eventually we will be able to attain the Buddhahood. So great compassion means wishing all the sentient beings from the suffering and the cause of suffering. So suffering means the three types of sufferings, or the temporary and long-term sufferings. And cause of suffering means the non-virtuous, etc. So for these two practices of loving kindness and compassion, first we should practice to our own mother, and then to our father and our family members, then to our other relatives and friends, and then to our enemies or to those who commit harmful actions towards oneself, and then eventually to all the sentient beings without any exception. So we can gradually extend the practice of loving kindness and compassion. So then eventually we can practice to all the sentient beings. So gradually means not many years of gap, but possibly try to do in a short time, maybe not in same hour or same day, but as soon as possible we should try to reach the do the infinite or the limitless practice of loving kindness and compassion in few days or few weeks or so, not in 30, 40, 50 years or so. And based on these two positive thoughts, then the third main topic of this common wisdom experience is to practice the bodhicitta. Bodhicitta also has two, relative bodhicitta and the ultimate bodhicitta or the absolute bodhicitta. First, the relative bodhicitta, which means just by practicing loving kindness and compassion, it's good, but it's not enough. It won't make us a Mahayana Buddhist. To become a Mahayana Buddhist, we must generate the bodhicitta or the enlightened mind. So this enlightened mind or the bodhicitta is very important. The great Sakya Pandita Kunga Gyaltsen Pelsangbo said in his text called Domsum Ravye that in the Mahayana, there's no practice without the bodhicitta. So there's no Mahayana practice without having the bodhicitta. Every Mahayana practice should be sealed by the bodhicitta or the enlightenment mind. And to say in a short, there's many reasons why we have to practice bodhicitta, because all of us have the same wish to gain happiness and to overcome suffering. Because of that, we need to practice altruistic thought, and especially the bodhicitta. And also, we are born in this samsara, not only one time, but infinite times. And whenever we are born, we will not have the same parents again and again, or same dear ones again and again. So, through this logical reason, we can say and prove that all descendant beings has been one's own dear parents or dear ones in this life or in the past lifetime. So, therefore, in order to repay their kindness, now it is the right time, and now we have the best opportunity to do this to repay the kindness through the practice of bodhicitta or the enlightenment mind. And also, we as a Mahayana Buddhist, we must practice the bodhicitta. So, bodhicitta means at the moment we don't have the full power to help all the beings. Only Buddha has the full power. So, therefore, in order to help all the sentient beings, in order to lead all the sentient beings from suffering and dissatisfaction to temporary and ultimate happiness, we must attain the Buddhahood. And then, based on this, we develop the wishing bodhicitta. So wishing bodhicitta means wishing all descendant beings to gain happiness, or for the sake of all descendant beings, we wish to attain the Buddhahood. So this is the wishing bodhicitta. And then engaging bodhicitta also has general meaning, which means just by wishing, we cannot reach the Buddhahood. To reach Buddhahood or to attain Buddhahood, we must engage on the path that will help us to reach the Buddhahood. For example, just by wishing to visit the holy places such as Bodh Gaya, we will not reach there. Just by wishing, we will not reach there. After wishing, then we must prepare, we must embark or engage on the path or on the way to reach the holy place of Bodh Gaya. So, similarly, after having this wish, then we must engage, we must do something, we must engage in the Dharma practice, so that will help us to fulfill our wish or to attain the Buddhahood. So therefore, engaging bodhicitta is also very important to practice. And especially, we should practice the equality, means we and others, or oneself and others, are same. We all have the same wish, which is to gain happiness and overcome the suffering. And also, wishing, we should do something not only to gain happiness for oneself alone, but to gain happiness for all of us. So, based on such thought, then we should practice the equality. And after practicing the equality, then we should practice the self-exchange, which means giving all our happiness and causing happiness to others, and taking or receiving all the sufferings and non-virtuous actions of others to oneself. So through this practice, which we do mentally, then one can accumulate great merit. One can help others in a greater way, in a greater way. So this practice is also very important. In the Bodhisattva Chaya Avatara, the great Indian master called Shantideva said, if we don't practice the self-exchange, then we cannot accomplish or attain the Buddhahood, and also we want to gain real happiness. So, therefore, this practice is very important. And also, we should do the practice of six perfections and four means of gathering. The sixth perfection also has the superficial or improper practice of generosity, etc. So, for example, if we give alcohol to others, although this is a generosity, but this is not a good thing to give, because alcohol is something that we need to abandon. So, like that, there are improper practice of generosity, moral conduct, and other such as patience, etc. So we should know what are the improper ones and what are the proper ones. So then, after knowing, then we should practice the genuine six perfections, which is very important. And then the four means of gathering, which means we should practice the generosity in a genuine way, and then give pleasant speech, which includes giving Dharma in a skillful way. And then third, letting others or influencing others to practice the precious and profound Buddha Dharma. And fourth, not only asking others or influencing others to practice, but oneself is also practicing, or oneself is also engaging in the genuine practice of Dharma. So these are very important. Now, the next one is ultimate bodhicitta. And generally speaking, ultimate bodhicitta is something that we really need to practice. Without the ultimate bodhicitta, we cannot eradicate the selfish thought or self-cherishing thought from our mental continuum. Because this ultimate bodhicitta, or the wisdom that realizes the true nature of all the phenomena directly, is the one that is the direct opposite of selfish thought. Because this wisdom realizes the selflessness directly, which is the direct opposite of selfish thought. So, this bodhicitta, ultimate bodhicitta, can really eradicate the selfish thought, which is the source of all the sufferings of the samsara. So, the moment that we gain the ultimate bodhicitta is the moment that we gain the liberation from the whole samsara. And it is the moment that we gain the first bhumi, and also it is the moment that we gain the path of seeing. So, to have the ultimate bodhicitta, we must practice the karma abiding, which means to have a stable mind. So, to stabilize our mind, we need to practice the karma abiding. And to do the practice of karma abiding, first we need to know, if you do it in an improper way, then there are five faults that we need to recognize. And then also there are eight antidotes to remove or to overcome these five faults. And also there are nine skillful methods to help our practice of karma abiding. So, the skillful method means first we should have a meditation object which is not moving and which is not so far or not so near to us, not so high, not so low. And then we ourselves should sit in a meditational posture without moving. And we should not blink our eyes, and we should have this meditational posture very clearly, very vividly. And then based on this, then we can apply these 9 skillful methods that will help us to practice the genuine or the real karma abiding. And then based on karma abiding, then we will have the insight, wisdom, or it is known as the shamatha and vipassana. So shamatha is the karma abiding, and then now we need to practice the vipassana or the insight wisdom. So this insight wisdom is very important, because insight wisdom is the wisdom, and wisdom is like the eye to see the path. And other perfections are like without wisdom, without the eye. So if there are other 5 perfections, or if there are other 5 practices without the wisdom, then the other 5 are not called the perfection. It is only called perfection because of the 6th perfection. If there is a 6th one, then others are also be the part of perfection, or can be the 1st perfection, 6th and 2nd perfection, etc. So anyway, inside wisdom is really important. So with this, I conclude my short talk on the common wisdom experience. Actually, in the common wisdom experience, through these practices, one also gain common experiences. But then later, when we really practice the mantrayana part, the actual mantrayana part, then through these practices, then we can gain the uncommon vision of experiences. And now the 3rd main topic is the pure vision, which refers to the state of Buddhahood. So in this topic, we need to understand, we need to study and contemplate on the infinite qualities of the Buddha. Although it is not possible for us to study and contemplate on all the Buddha's qualities, because Buddha's quality is limitless, just like space. But we try to understand as much as possible. And in the text, it mentioned about the qualities of Buddha's body, speech, and wisdom. For example, Buddha's body can be manifest in many different forms, and especially like Buddha Nimanakaya can manifest in many different forms at the same time to different followers at different places. And through this Nimanakaya form, Buddha will help or benefit sentient beings. Also, Nimanakaya will manifest in, Nimanakaya is a manifestation, and it can be manifest in different forms, like Buddha or Bodhisattva or Dharma King or other human beings, or in animals, or also in inanimate objects like bridge, ferry, etc. So this is Buddha. Actually, Buddha has few kayas, can be combined into 3 kayas also. 3 kayas in Dhammakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nimanakaya. Dhammakaya is the ultimate wisdom, which is the non-differentiation of ultimate wisdom and the method side. And Sambhogakaya is the one that has the 5 certainties, And Nimanakaya is the one that I just mentioned. So Nimanakaya has many, many different forms. Through these forms, it benefits all the beings. So whatever, wherever form is needed, it can be appeared in that particular form to help others. And then Buddha's voice, it says, Buddha's one voice can teach many different topics in many different languages to many different followers at different places. And also there are many other qualities of Buddha's voice. And Buddha's wisdom, the ultimate quality of wisdom, for example, Buddha knows everything. Buddha is omniscient. We, as an ordinary human being, we know the law of karma, but we only know the gross part of the law of karma. We don't know the subtle part of the law of karma. So Buddha knows everything, all the subtle ones, like why some fruits are in yellow, in red, or in green, why some are in round shape, why some are in long shape, etc. Why some have sweet taste, some have sour taste, why some are big, some are small size, etc. And also Buddha knows all our previous lives details, like where we are born, who are our parents, family members and friends of that particular life, etc. And also about the future. So Buddha knows all this in details without any hesitation. Buddha knows all of them pretty clearly. So Buddha has the ultimate wisdom, ultimate knowledge, ultimate compassion, ultimate power, etc. So Buddha has all the ultimate qualities. We can just say Buddha has all the ultimate qualities, but we cannot say all these qualities in detail, Buddha, because Buddha has ultimate qualities which are limitless, which are infinite. So with this, I conclude my short talk on triple vision. Since this teaching is given in one session, so I try to summarize these important topics of the triple vision. So with this, I conclude my short talk, and at the end, I sincerely wish that may the blessings of our root guru, His Holiness the 41st Khoma Thichen Rinpoche, and all the gurus and Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha be with you now and always. Thank you very much.